Well, hello to everyone. This is Andrew Scott here, and I'm sitting at a sunny London Business School talking to my colleague Francisco Gomes, Professor of Finance at London Business School. Francisco's research focuses on individual and social approaches to lifetime savings and wealth accumulation, so he seemed a great person to talk to in discussing the 100-year life. So thank you very much, Francisco, for agreeing to talk to us.
Hello, Andrew. My pleasure to be here.
Very kind. And so I guess, you know, the first big question to start with is what would people need to think about when they're planning for their retirement?
Well, it's actually interesting you're using the word planning, because I would say the first thing people need to think about when planning for retirement is actually to plan for it. You'd be surprised at how many people simply do not save enough for retirement. The numbers are staggering, and they're just getting worse. So the first thing that is very important is that early on in your life, one should start making a clear plan of how much we need once we retire and how we're going to achieve that target wealth. Most people, when they first do that calculation, they are absolutely shocked with the conclusions and how much they actually need to save to achieve that target level of wealth. So it's very important to start planning early on and try and adjust that target as our personal circumstances change over time. That doesn't mean we need to start saving a lot of money early on. So early in our life, we have a lot of expenditures that are particularly concentrated, such as investment in our education, buying a house. We have children and expenditures with children. Those tend to be concentrated early on. Our income also tends to be lower in the early part of our lives. Then as we progress throughout our careers, we tend to have higher income. So it doesn't mean we have to save a lot early on, but we need to start planning early on, to start having a clear path of how we're going to achieve that target level of wealth that we need when we retire. And when we get to a stage where we can afford to start saving, we really need to start saving significantly to achieve that target.
Okay, very interesting. So, people obviously get worried when they hear that as a statement. How much do you think people do need to save?
So that is, a question that unfortunately does not get a simple answer when you ask somebody working in household finance. So one of the most frustrating things for people in this field is that one size doesn't fit all. We cannot give very clear-cut answers to that question. I can say you should save 3%, or you should save 5%, or you should take those 5% and invest 50% in the stock market, or 30%. All that depends on a lot of very specific individual circumstances. In particular, so it depends on, again, do we have a house? Don't we have a house? What mortgage do we have? Do we have children and we need to provide for our children? Do we have stable jobs? Don't we have stable jobs? Are we on career paths that imply income that's going to grow a lot over our lives or not? Are we going to be able to retire later or not? All of these circumstances matter a lot, not just for how much we need to save, but they matter a lot for how we can invest those savings in terms of being more or less aggressive in our investment decisions. And that is very important, because depending on how willing we are to take risk and how much we can afford to take risk, that is going to determine a lot how much we need to save in the first place. If we want to be very cautious about how much we save, or rather where we invest our savings, and then depending on what social security arrangements we have in place, we might need to save things like anywhere between 5-10% of our yearly income based on average social security compensation scheme. If we don't have any social security on the side, then the number will obviously grow 10-20% or even more, yeah. Easily more than that. If we are willing to take more risk and invest in stock market or risky investments, then we can easily halve that number. Yeah. So a lot of circumstances didn't matter to determine what the right amount of savings is for
that's right. Individual. And of course, the danger of risk is exactly that. It's risky, and you therefore may not be able to afford to retire when you want to. But that's right. And I should add, of course, that none of this is construed as financial advice. We're not here as investment professionals. But it is, I think, one of the hardest things for individuals to know, because it does depend so much on their circumstances, and often about numbers that people aren't very sure about. I mean, what's the expected rate of return in the next 30 years is going to be a key number, and that's a very hard one to assess. It also strikes me that one of the hardest numbers is knowing how much money you need when you retire. So I wonder what your own thoughts on that, what the sort of the ratio of your pension to your income, what is considered desirable or good.
Yes, absolutely. One important calculation we need to do is figure out how much money we're going to need to have at retirement. That depends on a lot of circumstances. first of all, obviously, depends on how many years we expect to live after retirement, what's our expected longevity. And that in itself is uncertain, which in turn also means that we want to have a buffer to insure against longevity. So if I expect to live until 85, and then I'm lucky enough to live until 86, 87, and I haven't planned for it, then it's too late to find new savings at that stage. So I really need to have additional buffer for that. It depends a lot also on our personal circumstances in terms of things like what are the social security provisions, what is the government state level provision for medical insurance, for health coverage, for all these types of arrangements that, for example, if we live in a country like the US, out-of-pocket medical expenditures at retirement can be very high. If we live in another country like Sweden, where a lot of those things are more provided for, then those will be significantly lower. In general, I would recommend that total income, so whatever we have from our social security and our private savings, for the average individual, we should aim to have something like around, say, 60% of our average pre-retirement wealth.
Yeah.
But again, that's, as we said before, we're not giving specific financial advice to each individual because personal circumstances vary a lot.
No, I agree, but that does seem to be a common number. Now, the other thing that struck me when I read through the academic advice and talk to people, the common response people say to me is, oh, I'm not saving enough, but I've got a lot of money in my house. It's interesting reading the literature on that because a lot of people say, don't think about your housing wealth because that means you've either got to sell your house or you should use it for precautionary purposes. I wonder from your research, either theoretical or empirical, what your views were on housing wealth compared to other forms of financial wealth.
So housing wealth factors into that calculation that we said of the 60%, because if I already have a house and I bought it before, then I don't need to buy it again. I still need to obviously maintain it, and we know those expenses can be non-trivial, but it's obviously very different from actually buying it. But indeed, when it comes to using up that wealth as a retire, that typically is very hard. And so to a large extent, we can't count on that to pay our medical bills or just pay our heating bills, just normal expenditures when we retire. There's products such as reverse mortgages, another product that are trying to allow for equity release and allow agents to tap into that wealth. But those are markets that are significantly underdeveloped at this stage. In fact, that's one of the bigger problems, I would say, in terms of solutions in the marketplace, is actually finding products for retirees. So a lot of the research on the academic side and a lot of the products on the out there in the market actually target accumulation until retirement and what should we do and what are the best products. And not much thought has gone into what should we do after retirement and products to deal with those particular issues of retirees.
Very interesting. So obviously the prescriptions vary enormously from person to person. But what general broad-based advice can you offer people as a finance professor who studied this?
So in terms of savings, let's basically based on the numbers we just discussed. So if we're talking about somebody who wants to invest safely throughout their lives, you would need to save, maybe depending on your social security arrangements, you have a typical social security or typical pension that exists nowadays, not clear how long those things are going to last for a lot of people, and people are starting now are certainly not having access to those pensions anymore, so, but, you know, a savings rate of anywhere around 10% would probably be, you know, a decent number. If we're talking about somebody who's willing to take more risks, and again, invest in the stock market, then as you wisely put it, we don't know what's going to happen to the stock market going forward, so you know, there's risk. But if it behaves in some way similar to what it behaved historically, even with a conservative view on that, you can probably cut that number in half. So those would be kind of broad guidelines. In terms of the actual exposure, then what it should invest more in safer assets or risky assets, again, depends on one's ability to take risk and tolerance to risk. But just to point one thing out is everybody's aware that the stock market is risky. Everybody knows the stock market is risky. Everybody knows the stock market collapsed after the financial crisis. Everybody knows the stock market collapsed, you know, around the new millennium. Very few people, or much less people, are aware of how well the stock market has done historically, or the great returns people have gotten, say, immediately after the financial crisis. Yeah. That's actually another sad thing, is that most people are shying away from the stock market because they understand it as being very risky.
Yeah.
And only those more savvy investors understand the great returns that it's given historically. Yeah. So to put that, for example, in perspective, if you have somebody retiring today and that person had put £1,000 when he or she was 25 years old, so 40 years ago, if that £1,000 had been put in a safe asset, say bank account, short-term government bonds, those £1,000 would now be worth about £1,500. So you'd gain £500. If you had invested in a well-diversified stock market index, and that is very important, and low fees, then you would have right now about £8,900. Mm. So a staggering difference would have been there. Now, of course, that person would have lost half of his or her wealth during a financial crisis. Would have lost half during the turn of the millennium, more or less. But he would have earned all these other great returns that person would have been aware of and end up turning to those £8,900.
Very good, interesting. Although past performance is not an indicator of future performance.
Yes, again, we're not giving financial advice.
I wondered what the sort of common mistakes or misperceptions were that people made.
So the first one, again, is not planning enough and not starting to plan early enough. And so by the time... retirement is one of these things that is unique because we don't get to try a second time.
Mm.
You know, I go and buy a bottle of milk, I don't like it, I buy another bottle of milk next week. And retirement, if we reach 65, even 60 years old, and by then we see, oh, we don't have enough money, is just too late. I mean, maybe I can work a few extra years, maybe I can work a few extra hours a week, but most jobs don't give you that flexibility, or how much you can extra generate from those extra years is going to be limited. So it's very important to start planning early, and most people don't. That's actually becoming much, much worse, because traditionally we had these social security arrangements where we didn't actually have to think about saving for retirement. So we contribute a fraction of our salary to some pot, and there would be this thing called a pension fund that would manage that pot and would give us some fraction of our salary again when we retire. And now we're moving more and more to systems that are called defined contribution schemes, where we take a pot of money and we put it, and it's our own pot of money that accumulates over time. That has many, many advantages, and that's why we're moving to those schemes. But one concern is that it puts a lot of pressure on individuals to know how much to save. So now I have to know how much money I need to put in that pot, because in a lot of them there's flexibility. And what we're finding is that more and more, a significant fraction of our population is just not putting enough money there. Mm-hmm. So the dispersion, if you want, of outcomes as people reach retirement is not much bigger, because we have a lot of people that actually profited a lot from these more efficient mechanisms and have a lot more wealth to retire on, and we have a huge fraction of the population that did not. Another important mistake is, for those who actually are willing to take risk, is basically not choosing well-diversified low-fee index funds, essentially. So if I want to invest in stocks, fees are a killer, and we're talking about saving for retirement. If we invest in a fund that just charges 1% more fee versus another, as that accumulates over retirement, that is like giving out 25% or more of my wealth. So every £4 that I save, I'm throwing one away. That is just huge. And not investing in diversified indexes is again, just taking extra risk, as we already discussed. Stock market is risky enough. Mm-hmm. Let's not add more risk by not investing in a well-diversified index. Yeah.
No, the charges is extraordinary, and of course even more important with this current very low level of long-term interest rates. Now, the 100 Year Life is about pensions, it's about many things, but it's about longevity. So, you know, it appears each generation has about 10 years more life expectancy than their parents. So I wondered, you know, what that meant for these issues that we're talking about.
It's very important, because on one hand, this increase in longevity that we've seen in recent periods have been astonishing. And, you know, that's wonderful for all of us. But obviously, that means that we need to understand that when we save for retirement, we need to make sure that we save, for example, more than previous generations. So again, when we say heterogeneity matters and one size doesn't fit all, one mistake we might often have is, for example, copy our parents. Say, oh, my parents saved this much, and that worked for them, so I can do the same. Forget it. That was a completely different world where, you know, education had different costs, housing had different costs, and longevity was very different, and expenses with children were very different. So We need to think very, very well about what our circumstances are, and we need to save much more to meet that extra longevity. Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of discussion on we might need to work more. A lot of things that are changing because of this. But to the extent that we're probably not going to be working all those extra years, a lot of things are going to be changing, yeah. And you know that's certainly one of the very interesting themes of your book. And so that's going to create a lot of uncertainty into the planning, if we have sort of this multi-stage life, a lot of uncertainty into how we plan for all these different stages of life cycle. And we're going to have to think much more about products to adjust to all these different stages.
No, I think that's right. And it's a very good point that if each generation is living longer, then the role models of the past may not be appropriate. I think that's going to be a really interesting social and financial change. Fantastic, Francisco. It's a difficult subject, and people often don't like to think about saving for the future, but as you say, it's absolutely crucial. So
yes.
Thank you so much for your time and your insights.
Thank you, Andrew. Pleasure.